Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The World of Percy Jackson. In this episode, we are going to end off with chapters 57 to 58 and finish off the Heroes of Olympus series and also conclude the last episode of this podcast. It's been a great journey with you guys, and yeah. So without further ado, let's read chapter 57, Piper. Piper wished she could charm herself to sleep. It may have worked on Gaia, but the last two nights she'd hardly gotten a wink. The days were fine. She loved being back with her friends, Lacey and Mitchell and all the other Aphrodite kids. Even her bratty second-in-command, Drew Tanaka, seemed relieved, probably because Piper could run things and give Drew more time for gossip and in-cabin beauty treatments. Piper kept busy helping Reyna and Annabeth coordinate between the Greeks and Romans. To Piper's surprise, the other two girls valued her skills as a go-between to smooth over any conflicts. There weren't many, but Piper did manage to return some Roman helmets that mysteriously made their way into the camp store. She also kept a fight from breaking out between the children of Mars and the children of Ares over the best way to kill a Hydra. On the morning the Romans were scheduled to leave, Piper was sitting on the pier at the canoe lake, trying to placate the naiads. Some of the lake spirits thought the Roman guys were so hot that they too wanted to leave for Camp Jupiter. They were demanding a giant portable fish tank for the journey west. Piper just concluded negotiations when Reyna found her. The praetor sat next to her on the dock. Hard work? Piper blew a strand of hair out of her eyes. Naiads can be challenging. I think we have a deal. If they still want to go to at the end of the summer, we'll work out the details then. But, naiads tend to forget things in about 5 seconds. Reyna traced her fingertips across the water. Sometimes I wish I could forget things that quickly. Piper studied the praetor's face. Reyna was one demigod who hadn't seemed to change during the war with the giants, at least not on the outside. She still had the same strong, unstoppable gaze, the same regal, beautiful face. She wore her armor and purple cloak as easily as most people would wear shorts and a t-shirt. Piper couldn't understand how anyone could take so much pain, shoulder so much responsibility without breaking. She wondered if Reyna ever had anyone to confide in. "You did so much," Piper said. "For both camps. Without you, none of it would have been possible." "All of us played a part, sure, but you. I just wish you got more credit." Reyna laughed gently. "Thank you, Piper. But I don't want attention. You understand what that's like, don't you?" Piper did. They were so different, she understood not wanting to attract attention. Piper had wished for that her whole life, with her dad's fame, the paparazzi, the photos and scandal stories in the press. She met so many people who said, "Oh, I want to be famous. That would be so great." But they had no idea what it was really like. She'd seen the toll it took on her father. Piper wanted nothing to do with it. She could understand the appeal of the Roman way, too. To blend in, be one of the team, work as a part of a well-oiled machine. Even so, Reyna had risen to the top. She couldn't stay hidden. "Your power from your mom," Piper said. "You can lend strength to others?" Reyna pursed her lips. "Nico told you?" "No, I sensed it, watching you lead the Legion. That must drain you. How do you, get that strength back?" "When I get that strength back, I'll let you know." She said it like a joke, but Piper sensed the sadness behind her words. "You're always welcome here," Piper said. "If you need to take a break, get away. You got Frank now. You could assume more responsibility for a while. It might do you good to make some time for yourself when nobody's going to be looking at you as praetor." Reyna met her eyes, as if trying to gauge how serious the offer was. "Would I be expected to sing that odd song about how Grandma puts on her armor?" "Not unless you really want to, but we might have to ban you from Capture the Flag. I have a feeling you could go against the entire camp solo and still beat us." Reyna smirked. "I'll consider the offer. Thank you." She adjusted her dagger, and for a moment Piper thought about her own blade, Catoptris, which was now locked in her hope chest in her cabin. Ever since Athens, when she'd used the blade to stab the giant Enceladus, its visions had stopped completely. "I wonder," Rana said. "You're a child of Venus. I mean, Aphrodite. Perhaps you could explain something your mother said." "I'm honored. I'll try, but I have to warn you. My mom doesn't make sense to me a lot of the time. Once in Charleston, Venus told me something. She said, 'You will not find love where you wish or where you hope. No demigod shall heal your heart.' I have struggled with that for..." Her words broke. Piper had a strong urge to find her mother and punch her. She hated how Aphrodite could mess up someone's life with just a short conversation. "Rena," she said, "I don't know what she meant, but I do know this. You are an incredible person. There is someone out there for you. Maybe it's not a demigod. Maybe it's a mortal. Or I don't know. But when it's meant to happen, it will. And until it does, hey, you have friends. Lots of friends, both Greek and Roman. The thing about you being everyone's source of strength, sometimes you might forget that you need to draw strength from others. I'm here for you." Rana stared across the lake. "Piper McLean, you have a way with words. I'm not charm speaking, I promise." "No charm speak required." Rana offered her hand. "I have a feeling we'll see each other again." They shook, and after Rana left, Piper knew that Rana was right. They would meet again because Rana was no longer a rival, no longer a stranger or a potential enemy. She was a friend. She was family. That night, the camp felt empty without the Romans. Piper already missed Hazel. She missed the creaking timbers of the Argo II and the constellations her lamp used to make against the ceiling of her cabin aboard the ship. Lying in her bunk in cabin 10, she felt so restless she knew she wouldn't be able to doze off. She kept thinking about Leo. Again and again, she replayed what had happened in the fight against Gaia, trying to figure out how she could have failed Leo so badly. Around 2 in the morning, she gave up trying to sleep. She sat up in bed and gazed out the window. Moonlight turned the woods silver. The smells of the sea and the strawberry fields wafted on the breeze. She couldn't believe that just a few days ago, the Earth Mother had awoken and almost destroyed everything Piper held dear. Tonight seemed so peaceful. So normal. Tap, tap, tap. Piper nearly hit the top of her bunk. Jason was standing outside the window, rapping on the frame. He grinned. "Come on." "What are you doing here?" she whispered. "It's after curfew. The patrol harpies will shred you. Just come on." Her heart racing, she took his hand and climbed out the window. He led her to cabin 1 and took her inside, where the huge statue of hippie Zeus glowered in the dim light. Jason? "What exactly?" "Check it out." He showed her one of the marble columns that ring the circular chamber. On the back, almost hidden against the wall, iron rungs led upward. A ladder. "Can't believe I didn't notice this sooner. Wait till you see." He began to climb. Piper wasn't sure why she felt so nervous, but her hands were shaking. She followed him up. At the top, Jason pushed open a small trapdoor. They emerged on the side of the domed roof, on the flat edge, facing north. The whole of Long Island Sound spread out to the horizon. They were so far up and at such an angle that nobody below could possibly see them. The patrol harpies never flew this high. "Look." Jason pointed at the stars, which made a splash of diamonds across the sky. Better jewels than even Hazel Levesque could have summoned. "Beautiful." Piper snuggled up against Jason, and he put his arm around her. "But aren't you going to get in trouble?" "Who cares?" Jason asked. Piper laughed quietly. "Who are you?" He turned, his glasses pale bronze and starlight. "Jason Grace, pleased to meet you." He kissed her, and... okay, they had kissed before, but this was different. Piper felt like a toaster, all her coils heated to red hot. Any more warmth and she'd start smelling like burnt toast. Jason pulled away enough to look in her eyes. "That night at the wilderness school, our first kiss under the stars." "The memory?" Piper said. "The one that never happened? Well, now it's real." "He made the ward against evil symbol. the same one he'd used to dispel his mother's ghost and pushed at the sky. From this point on, we're writing our own story with a fresh start, and we just had our first kiss. "I'm afraid to tell you this after just one kiss," Piper said, "but gods of Olympus, I love you." "Love you too, Pipes." She didn't want to ruin the moment, but she couldn't stop thinking of Leo and how he would have never had a fresh start. Jason must have sensed her feelings. "Hey," he said, "Leo is okay." "How can you believe that? He didn't get the cure. Nico said he died." "You once woke up a dragon with just your voice," Jason reminded her. "You believed the dragon should be alive, right?" "Yes, but we have to believe in Leo. There's no way he would die so easily. He's a tough guy." "Right." Piper tried to steady her heart. "So we believe Leo has to be alive. You remember the time in Detroit when the flattened Ma gasket with the car engine? Or those dwarves in Bologna? Leo took them down with a homemade smoke grenade made from toothpaste?" "Commander Toolbelt," Jason said. "Bad Boy Supreme," Piper said. Chef Leo, the tofu taco expert. They laughed and told stories about Leo Valdez, their best friend. They stayed on the roof until dawn rose and Piper started to believe that they could have a fresh start. It might even be possible to tell a new story in which Leo was still out there, somewhere. And that concludes chapter 57. Only one more chapter until the end of this episode. But there still remains hope for Leo to be alive. Or at least I still hold out hope as well for Leo to be alive. So, after the break, we'll read chapter 58. Conclude with an afterword. So, see you after the break. And we're back from the break. And now we're going to read chapter 58, Leo. Leo was dead. He knew that with absolute certainty. He just didn't understand why it hurt so much. He felt like every cell in his body had exploded. Now his consciousness was trapped inside a charred, crispy husk of demigod roadkill. The nausea was worse than any car sickness he'd ever had. He couldn't move, he couldn't see or hear. He could only feel pain. He started to panic, thinking maybe this was his eternal punishment. Then somebody put jumper cables on his brain and restarted his life. He gasped and sat up. The first thing he felt was the wind in his face. Then the searing pain in his right arm. He was still on Festus's back, still in the air. His eyes started to work again, and he noticed a large hypodermic needle retracting from his forearm. The empty injector buzzed, whirred, and retreated into a panel on Festus's neck. "Thanks, buddy," Leo groaned. "Man, being dead sucked. But that physician's cure? That stuff is worse." Festus clicked and clattered in Morse code. "No, man, I'm not serious," Leo said. "I'm glad to be alive. And yeah, I love you too. You did awesome." A metallic purr ran the length of the dragon's body. First things first, Leo scanned the dragon for signs of damage. Festus's wings were working properly, though his left medius membrane was shot full of holes. His neck plating was partially fused, melting from the explosion. But the dragon didn't seem to be in danger of crashing immediately. Leo tried to remember what had happened. He was pretty sure he had defeated Gaia, but he had no idea how his friends were doing back at Camp Half-Blood. Hopefully, Jason and Piper had gotten clear of the blast. Leo had a weird memory of a missile hurtling toward him and screaming like a little girl. What the heck had that been about? Once he landed, he'd have to check Festus's underbelly. The most serious damage, probably in that area, where the dragon had courageously grappled with Gaia while they blowtorched the sludge out of her. There was no telling how long Gaia Festus had been aloft. He needed to set down soon. Which raised the question, where were they? Below was a solid white blanket of clouds. The sun shone directly overhead in a brilliant blue sky. So it was about noon, but of which day? How long had Leo been dead? He opened the access panel in Festus's neck. The astrolabe was humming away, the crystal pulsing like a neon heart. Leo checked his compass and GPS, and a grin spread across his face. "Festus! Good news!" he shouted. "Our navigation readings are completely messed up!" Festus said, "Greek?" "Yeah! Descend! Get us below those clouds, and maybe..." The dragon plummeted so fast that the breath was sucked out of Leo's lungs. They broke through the blanket of white, and there, below them, was a single green island in a vast blue sea. Leo whooped so loud they probably heard him in China. Yeah! Who died? Who came back? Who's your freaking super-sized McShizzle now, baby? Woo! They spiraled toward Ojiji on the warm wind in Leo's hair. He realized his clothes were in tatters despite the magic they'd been woven with. His arms were covered in a fine layer of soot, like he just died in a massive fire. Which, of course, he had. But he couldn't worry about any of that. She was standing on the beach, wearing jeans and a white blouse, her amber hair pulled back. Festus spread his wings and landed with a stumble. Apparently, one of his legs was broken. The dragon pitched sideways and catapulted Leo face-first into the sand. So much for a heroic entrance. Leo spit a piece of seaweed out of his mouth. Festus dragged himself down the beach, made him clacking noises that meant, ow, ow, ow. Leo looked up. Calypso stood over him, her arms crossed, her eyebrows arched. You're late, she announced. Her eyes gleamed. Sorry, sunshine, Leo said. Traffic was murder. You're covered with soot, she noted, and you managed to ruin the clothes I made for you, which were impossible to ruin. Well, you know, Leo shrugged. Somebody had released 100 pachinko balls on his chest. I'm all about doing the impossible. She offered her hand and helped him up. They stood nose to nose as she studied his condition. She smelled like cinnamon. She always had that tiny freckle next to her left eye. Leo really wanted to touch it. She wrinkled her nose. You smell. I know, like I've been dead. Probably because I have been. Oh, to keep a final breath and all. But I'm better now. She stopped him with a kiss. The pachinko balls slammed around inside him. He felt so happy he had to make a conscious effort not to burst into flames. When she finally let him go, her face was covered in soot smudges. She didn't seem to care. She traced her thumb across his cheekbone. Leo Valdez, she said. Nothing else. Just his name. As if it were something magical. That's me, he said, his voice ragged. So, you want to get off this island? Calypso stepped back. She raised one hand and the wind swirled. Her invisible servants brought two suitcases and set them at her feet. What gave you that idea? Leo grinned. Packed for a long trip, huh? I don't plan on coming back. Calypso glanced over her shoulder at the path that led to her garden and her cavern home. Where will you take me, Leo? Somewhere to fix my dragon first, he decided. And then, wherever you want. How long was I gone? Seriously. Time is difficult on Ojigia, Calypso said. It felt like forever. Leo had a stab of doubt. He hoped his friends were okay. He hoped 100 years hadn't passed while he was flying around dead in Festus' search for Ojigia. He would have to find out. He needed to let Jason and Piper and the others know he was okay. But right now, priorities. Calypso was a priority. So once you leave Ojigia, he said, do you stay immortal or what? I have no idea. And you're okay with that? More than okay. Well then, he turned her toward his dragon. Buddy, you up for another flight to nowhere in particular? Festus blew fire and limped around. So we take off with no plan, Calypso said. No idea where we'll go or what problems await beyond this island. Many questions and no tidy answers. Leo turned up his palms. That's how I fly, sunshine. Can I get your bags? Absolutely. 5 minutes later, with Calypso's arms around his waist, Leo spurred Festus into flight. The bronze dragon spread his wings and they soared into the unknown. And that concludes chapter 58. The final chapter of The Blood of Olympus and the final chapter of this podcast. If you were wearing headphones during this podcast, I apologize. But yeah, now this marks the afterword of this episode. First of all, I would like to say thank you to all my fans who has supported me throughout this entire journey, who motivated me to keep going even when things got rough. And I think that this is definitely one of the most beautiful journeys I have ever been on. I still remember when I had first started this podcast, I had 14 listeners. And now we've grown. We've grown into a family. We've grown as an audience. We've grown as a podcast. And together, I hope that we'll be able to make a lot more with what we can do. But this, you all may be thinking, what is the end? What is the future for this podcast? A lot of you have been asking, will I be reading any more books? And unfortunately, I won't be. this marks the end of this entire podcast, and there will be no more books that will be read or laughed at or analyzed, at least with me. But that isn't to say that my journey as a podcaster is over. Be sure to check out the very definitely active Instagram, because I will be posting updates on there. Updates on maybe if I have a new podcast, or if any other updates come. But I hope that you will be able to follow that, and be able to get as many updates as you can, because I hope to keep all of you as a family, because we've grown as a family, and I hope to continue growing as a family, no matter what podcast we're on. So, without further ado, we will do our final Q&A session. And hopefully, you all get some answers that ends this podcast with good closure. First question, who do you think would have a better relationship with Calypso, Percy or Leo? Most likely Leo, because I think Percy and Calypso are going to be very awkward with each other, and Percy will probably do whatever he can to avoid Calypso. Mainly because it's just very awkward limbo-ness. So, yeah. Next question, how long do you think Percy will be dumbfounded by Nico's previous statement? Most likely a very long time. It will definitely be in the back of his head for a long time, especially because they've been on so many quests together. It definitely would not have been the same if a random demigod had come up to Percy and said the same thing, but this is Nico we're talking about, and Nico has practically spent almost all of his quests with Percy. So I think this is definitely going to stay in the back of Percy's head for a while. Next question is, how did you feel when Leo, quote-unquote, died? I had a hope from, if I'm going to be completely honest. I think that when we first read the chapter of him dying, there was hope inside of me. I just had this back of the mind hope that he wasn't really dead. He was more of just, he had a plan. And I knew that that plan was going to be successful because I had hope in Leo. And I was proven right. So, yeah. It was more of my faith in Leo that really sealed the deal. If he was really dead, that really would have been disappointing. Or sad for a while. But yeah. Next question. Have you watched Ghostbusters Afterlife? I have heard of the franchise, but other than that, I have not really watched any of those movies. Next question. If you could bring a demigod back to life, who would it be? Most likely, my top three would be Luke Castellan, Selena Beauregard, or Charles Beckendorf. I think that those three would be my top three. Now, whether it comes to choosing which one, that would probably take a while to decide. But those would be my top three. Any allergies or pet peeves? I am allergic to grass. But other than that, it's a struggle. But yeah. Pollen is a struggle in general. Next question. Who is better as a person? Hazel or Piper? I don't think there's any... differentiation between the two. I think that they're both amazing people, amazing demigods. So yeah, next question. Each demigod as a color, and Nico and Kochich. Let's see, Percy would definitely be blue. Annabeth, I would say a hint, maybe orange, a shade of orange. Orange seems like, I think orange combines with yellow and red. I think red is a very deep color. It's a color that invokes many emotions, and I think that Annabeth is multifaceted when it comes to her skills, her knowledge, and just her thoughts in general. So I think that combined with yellow, that shows that optimism that Annabeth definitely has. I think that combined those two, you get orange, and I think orange really sums up Annabeth. Hazel, I would probably do purple. Maybe because I think just the way she presents herself is just royalty. Royal purple is what I think she would be best fit for, because she's just someone who just is great at leading. And I think that the fact that she was the only person to be able to control Arian, that kind of command and that control and that confidence, I think royal purple suits Hazel a lot. Piper would most likely, I think Piper would be, a tinge, maybe, Piper would be, ironically, I think Piper would be pink. Not because she's the daughter of Aphrodite, because pink is such a bold yet strong color, and we can see how Piper proves herself again and again that she is just as strong as any other demigod. Yeah, as a daughter of Aphrodite, I think that they get really stereotyped a lot to be just someone who, you know, makes people fall in love or just doesn't do much. But I think Piper was able to go beyond those standards, and I think that pink is something that really suits her in that sense, because pink is always seen as this very stereotyped color. But I think Piper and pink would probably be that kind of breaking boundaries kind of color. Next one would probably be Jason. Most likely, I would say, I would probably say for Jason would probably be a mustard yellow. Most likely because I just see, like, Jason being this person who is a very... If he wasn't worried about being a praetor or just dealing with these quests, I think he would be a very just overall optimistic person. And he is an optimistic person during the quest, but he does get worried often. Hence, I think that mustard would be a very yellow mustard. Yeah, mustard would be a color for Jason, if that makes sense. Leo would probably be bright yellow, just because, you know, he tries to make the best out of every situation, and yellow is, you know, happiness and optimism. So I think Leo and bright yellow. Nico, I would probably say... I would probably say Nico is... maroon. And if I'm right, maroon is the combination of gray and red. Now, the reason why I say this is because Nico has been through very difficult times. I mean, we've seen this with the loss of Bianca. We've seen this with the loss of his mother. And I think that that gray really highlights those downward times for Nico. But that red shows how he's been able to persevere through that. Red is a symbol of, I think, to me, of determination. That no matter whenever things get tough, you're able to get through them. And I think maroon is a perfect color for Nico, because he has experienced those gray and dark times, but he has shown it with the red combined with the gray, that he's been able to persevere through those times. And I think that maroon really shows that. Next one. Coach Hedge would probably be... I would probably say he's a light blue. I think light blue kind of symbolizes just the feeling of caring. You know, I think Coach Hedge, as rough and tough as he might present to be, he's always someone that cares about the demigods. He's always someone that cares about his wife and his kids. I mean, we could see how much he was freaking out as he was on the ship when his wife was about to give birth. So I think that we can definitely see how Coach Hedge really represents that kind of light blue, sky blue, overlooking others and making sure that they're taken care of. So I think that definitely the nurturing light sky blue for Coach Hedge. Am I missing anybody? I think I'm missing Frank. Of course, can't forget Frank. Frank and Leo. Frank would probably be... I think Frank would probably be a green. Green to me seems like... I think emerald green, definitely. Emerald green is seen at... I think to me, emerald green symbolizes... bravery. Just that radiance of that color just shows how, you know, it can be paired with any other color and it would work just as well. And I think that Frank really symbolizes that because he's shown as a praetor that he can work with anybody and he can command a situation and make sure that everybody is able to follow the instructions clearly and still be able to come out looking, you know, in perfect health condition. So I think that Frank definitely symbolizes the emerald green. And then Leo would probably be... Oh, Leo's bright yellow. Am I missing anybody else? I don't think so. But yes. Let me know what you guys also think. But yes, that's what I think on in terms of colors. Next question is... Favorite book of the Heroes of Olympus series? The Lost Hero. It was when everybody was introduced. Leo, Jason, Piper. I mean, it was comedy on top of comedy. I just really enjoyed it. Next question. Who do you like, Percy or Jason? Yeah, I don't... I think I like them equally. They're all... They're both unique in their own perspectives. And I think that that's what makes them... Them. And I think that, that's what I like about each of them. Next question. If you could be immortal, would you take it? Oof. You know, when you think about why Calypso or Percy gave up their chance to be immortal, it's because the idea of having, of being immortal is that you get to spend that time with the people you care about. If you're immortal, you live beyond those years. You continue to live beyond the years of your loved ones. And I think that that really starts affecting you in a lot of ways. And I think that definitely if I was given that offer, I would not take it, most likely. But yes. Next question is, what are your thoughts about the Olympians? I'm assuming this is about the gods. The gods are very in the middle between to me. They have their moments where they're obviously, they have rules and they can't break those rules, and that's why they can't interact with the demigods as often. And, you know, it's a very weird situation for these demigods because obviously these gods are their parents, but they can't talk to their parents because they're gods and they have their own rules. And then there's moments where it's almost as if these gods, you know, they don't care whether these demigods are their children, but they're willing to do whatever it takes to punish them or do whatever it takes just so they get the better look. And I think that moments like that also make them look, you know, on the negative side. And then there's moments where they look on the positive side. So I think they both cancel out and put them right in the middle. But yes, that concludes our final Q&A session. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode as much as I did. And I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast as much as I enjoyed making it every single week. Hopefully in the future, we have another podcast. And be sure to follow the Instagram to get any updates on whether there may be a future podcast. But until then, and until forever, this is our final. But make sure you keep it with yourselves, that you stay safe, and you always stay out of boredom. This is the Podcaster, signing out.